Hi, I'm Siobhan Fletcher, one of the journalists at Manx Radio. Welcome to the Manx Newscast. This Hop Tuesday, Isle of Man ghost tours have been spooking visitors and Manxies alike for 21 years. Every week, the group lead three ghost walks around Douglas, Peel and Castletown, aimed at having fun and learning a little bit more about the darker, ghostly past that's on our doorstep. Founder Alan Shaw leads these tours and says he was first enticed by all things scary on a school trip.
I first got my love of ghosts when I was 8 years old. I used to live in Morecambe and we went to Lancaster Castle on a school trip. And when you first go into Lancaster Castle, they take you into the Great Hall where all the famous court cases have taken place. They then take you into the middle of the castle, the old police cells. They tell you to sit down, they slam the door and they close a little vent and you're in pitch darkness. And then they start to tell you about the famous prisoners held in those cells before and after their trial. But then they take you downstairs into the dungeon, of course, you know, in the oldest part of the castle. And it's where the witches were held from Pendle. The Pendle witch trial is one of the most famous witch trials in the world. And they tell you about the conditions they lived in whilst there. And then they take you to the corner, Gallows Corner, and they show you where the witches were hung. And then the guide points to a strange little small stool in a glass cabinet. It's only about 8 inches square and it's about 2.5 foot tall. And the reason why it was made, because one of the young girls, she's only 15 years old, she was too ill to walk to the gallows, so they made her a little chair to sit on while they hung her. And then the guide looks at you and he looked at me straight in the eye and he said, "And it's her ghost that haunts this part of the castle." And from that moment on, I was hooked on ghost stories.
You're now here on the Isle of Man, and I mean, we have the three different tours that you do every single week. Surely there's just an abundance of stories to choose from. Is there a particular one, if you were going to pick for each different tour, that sticks out to you as your favourite?
I think in Douglas it has to be the Times Press Office, because they've got some great stories there, because they printed a 2-page newspaper article on Christmas Eve telling all the ghost stories there, because as we all know, Christmas Eve is a traditional time to tell ghost stories. Many people say, no, it's not, it's the 31st of October today, but it's not. Traditionally, it's Christmas Eve, because the Victorians, they love their ghost stories. In fact, the Victorians made it a tradition that as you took your child into bed and before you blow out the candle, you would tell them a ghost story, as if they're not excited enough about Father Christmas coming. I'll try and terrify him to death. But let's think about this logically. The greatest ghost story ever written, without a shadow of a doubt, A Christmas Carol. It was written by a Victorian author to sell to Victorian parents to read to their Victorian children. And that's why The Christmas Carol was written. So in Douglas, it has to be the Times Press Office. I think in Peel, of course, it's got to be Peel Castle, the more they do. And down here in Castletown, it has to be Castle Rushen, because it's just so haunted. And we have the classic Woman in Black ghost stories, which are my favourite.
I had to find out more, so I went along to a tour in Castletown to find out a little bit about what they get up to and hear about the spooky goings on in our ancient capital.
Where else better to start the ghost walk at but the old police station behind me? Despite looking a lot older, it's only 122 years old. An old Bailey Scott design, a very famous architect here on the island. It replaced the original Castletown police station, which is on the right-hand side of the castle gate, where the grass now grows. There's three cells inside, but it's cell number two, which is haunted. Haunted by a man in a brown suit. Many people who've been locked up in there for their misdemeanors have awoken to find this man in a brown suit stood staring down at them as they lie in bed. You know he's a ghost because you can see through him. If you don't see him, you will hear him pacing up and down the cell all night. You ask any serving or ex-serving member of the constabulary and they will all tell you that yes, Castletown Police Station is a very haunted building. About 20 years ago, there's a crash on Fisher's Hill. You all know Fisher's Hill, don't you? Head down towards Port Erin. If you don't turn sharp right, you make a big splash. That's Fisher's Hill. Three cars involved. Thankfully, nobody hurt. But three police officers were dispatched to the scene. Two policemen and a policewoman. When they got back about an hour later, they started to do the paperwork in the round table in the round corner behind me. But these two policemen very cheekily said, "Tell you what, make your deal." Policeman said, "What's that?" He said, "Pop up to the co-op, get some milk, get a packet of biscuits, and we'll do the paperwork." She said, "You're on." So she put the kettle on the left-hand side of the door, then little windows, and then she left the building and went up to the co-op. She returned a few minutes later, went through the door, then turned left to go into the kitchen, and there she was, making everybody a brew. When these two policemen, who were sat at the round table in the round corner, suddenly, in between them, appeared the figure of a man in a brown suit. They said, even though he was stood between us, we could see each other through him. And you can tell a police officer told us this next bit, because he said this figure then turned and in a very hastily manner started to walk down the corridor. It walked into the woodwork of the door and disappeared out of sight. Seconds later, there was one almighty scream came from the kitchen. The sound of breaking cups was heard and a policewoman ran out and said, never guess what I've just seen. Said, we have. We've just seen it ourselves. So three officers saw this at exactly the same time. And word very quickly got around Castletown that a ghost had been seen inside Castletown Police Station. And the following day, the newspaper reporters were swarming all over town, interviewing anybody they could in relation to this ghost story. They spoke to serving officers, ex-serving officers, and one gentleman who told them that he'd been locked up in there for his misdemeanors the night before, only to wake up to find this man stood staring down at him as he lay in bed. Now, the area sergeant, he didn't believe a word of this. He thought they was making these stories up. Why? Well, you've not been able to lock prisoners inside there for many years. Why not? Because there's no central heating. But this central heating at the newly opened Port Erin Police Station, you can lock as many people in there up as you want. As I also mentioned, you have to get your own milk and biscuits down here in Castletown. You don't at the newly opened Port Erin Police Station. Everything's provided for you. There's no colour televisions, leather couches, plush carpet to rest your tired feet in Castletown. There is at Port Erin. You can see where we're going with this one, can't you? So he thought they was making this story up purely so they didn't have to use old Castletown Police Station. So he ordered, if not demanded, that any officer, male, female, solo or crewed, must use Castletown Police Station for the coverage of the area. Of course, they abided by his orders. But about 18 months later, this very same sergeant was in his office, the right-hand side of the main door, 8:30, one Thursday night, getting ready to log off and head back to Douglas. When he had a feeling that someone was behind him, he turned round, expecting to see one of his colleagues, but there, stood in the doorway, staring at him, was the man in a brown suit. Before the sergeant could do anything, this figure turned, took one step to walk out of the sergeant's office, and as his foot touched the floor, he disappeared in front of the sergeant's eyes. Now the sergeant, who didn't believe a word in this, been making his views very clearly known for the last 18 months that ghosts don't exist, did the wise and the honourable thing. He took out his notebook, took out his pen, and he documented the time and date he'd just seen the ghost of Castletown Police Station. Now, you could say Castle Rushen is the most haunted castle on the island. In fact, it is the most haunted castle on the island. But then again, we've only got two castles. Peel Castle is haunted, but not as haunted as Castle Rushen. A ghost, she haunts outside the main gate just over there. I don't want to see her tonight. Sounds a bit strange on a ghost walk, that, doesn't it, really? Don't want to see a ghost. Because she's only seen on stormy, foul, horrible, wet evenings. She was first documented in Walden's writings in 1726 when he wrote a book about the supernatural Isle of Man. He was talking to a member of the public who told him, on a stormy, foul, horrible, wet night, that's where we get that expression from, as he was walking past the gate of the castle, stood just outside that gate was a woman in a black dress. She had no coat on. The wind and the rain was in her hair, and as he walked up behind her, he shouted, Bayek love, put a coat on, you'll catch your death. Well, she already had caught her death, because without saying a word, without turning to look at him, she walked forward and disappeared into the woodwork of the gate. Now, sadly, the building we're now talking about, you can't see because of the scaffolding and the tarpaulin, but behind all this work here is Derby House. Derby House is a beautiful building. It has been, throughout its life, many, many things. And as you can see now, it continues to change. When it was originally built, it was a private residence And if you had a house that size, you'd have staff. It later went on to be offices, a warehouse, a post office. The post box was still there. I hope they keep it. And at one point, it was a meeting hall. You could rent it. And the Oddfellows used to rent that. They used to meet there once a fortnight for their meetings, a charitable organisation here on the island. But because they shared the building with other people, the tables and chairs which they owned, they would store in a little room round the back. But every time they came to lock up the door, they'd hear a commotion coming from this room, only to return upstairs to find out tables and chairs which had been tidied, neat, stacked, neat and tidy moments earlier had now been cascaded over the floor. They would stack them up, make them neat and tidy again, but every time they came to the door, they'd hear this commotion, only to return to find tables and chairs scattered everywhere again. They could never work out who or what was doing this. But one evening, they had a gentleman over from Liverpool, giving a lecture on charitable events. Nothing to do with the paranormal. But at the end of the night, after the meeting, and before he headed back to his hotel, two of these chaps from the Oddfellows were going to take him down to the glue pot for a few beers. But when they got to the front door, this chap from Liverpool said, "Before you lock up, can I ask you a favour?" He said, "Certainly. What's that?" He said, "Would you mind if I pop back inside your building for 5 or 10 minutes on my own?" He said, "Why? What have you forgotten?" He said, "I've not forgotten anything." He said, "I don't tell many people this, but I'm a medium. I can see and communicate with spirits. And whilst I've been inside your building, I'm getting a call from a girl round the back of the building. This girl knows that I can talk to her. She's been shouting me all night, and I feel it'd be really rude if I was just to leave without popping back to see what she wants. Would you mind waiting?" Said, "Not at all." So off he went. And 10 minutes later, he came back down. He said, "I was right. You've got a ghost inside your building." "Have we really?" "Yeah, the ghost of a girl. She's 16 years old, or she was 16 years old when she died. She was a servant inside this building many years ago, and she died inside this building. I've offered to help her into the light, but she's happy where she is. She's happy that she's still inside the building. She's happy that other people use the building. But she's not happy with you lot." "Why not?" He said, "Because you disturb her. You disturb her every time you have a meeting by going into her room, and that's where you put the tables and chairs. And she doesn't like this. She keeps knocking them over," so she told me. Well, of course, he was right, but no one had mentioned that. "I tried to explain to her that you are allowed to do that, and she sort of understands, but she's still not happy about it. So she's come to a bit of an agreement with you." "So what's that?" "She's promised that if you shout good night to her when you leave, she'll stop knocking the tables and chairs over. And by the way, her name's Annie." So these two gentlemen, with this chap from Liverpool, now stood at the front door. One put the key in the lock. He said to his mate, "Go on then." "What?" "Shout good night to any of the ghosts." "I'm not shouting good night to any ghost. We're just promising we would." "It's a wind-up. He must do this wherever, everywhere he goes. Doesn't like his winding me up. Well, what should we do?" "So I'll tell you what. If I shout good night to the ghost, you buy the beers." He said, "You're on." So okay then. He put the key in the door, shouted, "Good night, Annie." And for the first time ever, the tables and chairs had been left alone. Word very quickly got around the Oddfellows that all he had to do was to shout good night to Annie the ghost, and they wouldn't have to restack the tables and chairs. And they did this very happily for many years. But after a meeting one night, a few of them were down at the glue pot, having a few drinks, when one suddenly said to his mates, "Anybody say good night to Annie?" "I thought you had." "No, I haven't." And they put the beers down, ran up here and put the key in the door. But before they could shout goodnight to Annie, all they heard was a commotion coming from the room upstairs. They went upstairs to find out tables and chairs, which had been stacked neat and tidy moments earlier, had now been cascaded over the floor. They restacked them, made them neat and tidy. And from that point on, no one ever forgot to say goodnight to Annie ever again. Now, a few years ago, my colleague Eve introduced me to a lady called Pauline. Never met Pauline before. Pauline is now a firm family friend. And the reason why I was introduced to Pauline, because Pauline had done some research on her family tree. And she came across a death certificate. A death certificate of one of her relatives who was called Annie. She was 16 years old, employed as a servant inside Derby House. And she also died inside that building at the age of 16. So it looks like this story is definitely true. Now, we have been studying now 5 or 10 minutes talking about Annie, and I have a feeling that we've disturbed her. We've disturbed her by being here, because Annie is probably looking down at us now through the tarpaulin. from one of those windows in the building. So it's only fair, you know where this is going, don't you? It's only fair that before we go, we all say good night to Annie. Good night, Annie.
Bye, Annie.
Thank you very much. Let's have a quick walk over this way. Come on, keep up at the back. You've never seen Scooby-Doo? It's always the ones at the back that disappear first. And why on Scooby-Doo can it not be a real ghost at the end? Come on, it's only a cartoon. Make it a real ghost. Every time a new Scooby-Doo cartoon comes on, you think, come on, real ghost. No. Caretaker, rubber mask. I knew that was coming. Now, before we go any further, have you ever heard of the stone tape theory? No, the stone tape theory is this. Einstein stated that death or high emotion, energy is released from our body. This energy cannot be destroyed. It cannot be dispersed. It has to go somewhere. So the theory is it goes into the fabric of the building, especially the cement, which bonds the brickwork together, because cement does contain a high level of silica, which after all is the main ingredient in audio and video tapes. And our last few seconds here on Earth are then captured in the wall and held there. Then, on a certain time, they're just projected. You have to be there at the right time, the right place to see this. Let's say right here, right now, I decide to do something a little bit unusual, something different, something that will make me noticeable when I'm a ghost. I've got it. Let's say I just decide to go, but I have a heart attack and drop dead, bang. Energy comes out of my body and it goes into the fabric of the building. And that's where it stays. Maybe on the anniversary of my death, the centenary of my death, the next time the weather conditions are like this, it just projects my last few seconds here on Earth. I'll be the man in black who stands here going, every time a kid walks past, trying to make them cry. I must admit, we like to make kids cry on our tours. It's heartwarming driving home knowing you've made a child cry. It really is. But you always pay for it the following day. The phone starts ringing. My children couldn't sleep last night because of the ghost stories you told them. What part of ghost story do you not understand, Mrs.? But anyway. So that's what it is. You're going to be there at the right place at the right time to actually witness this. Now, when we go around from place to place investigating ghost stories as we did in Castletown many, many moons ago, we don't knock on someone's door and say, have you got a ghost story? Because they're probably just punchers. But if they did have a ghost story, they would tell us the briefest description and then slam the door in our face. Not only that, we never find anybody who's got a ghost story, but we find lots of people who know someone who's got a great ghost story. So what we do is we ask them to phone their friend up on behalf of us, invite them to their local pub in a few weeks' time, because give them a couple of weeks, they recall the finer part of the story, the details, what we like. And not only that, people feel more at ease meeting strangers in a pub, especially when they're telling ghost stories, and the promise of alcohol always seems to work as well. And this is what happened here in Castletown many years ago. We found a chap who didn't have a good ghost story, but his friend had a great one. So we phoned him up and we arranged to meet him in the local pub, the Glue Pot, a few weeks later. We went in, we sat down at the table, and he said, there was a reenactment taking place on certain places on the island because there was a group of 40 Americans visiting the island. They all had something to do with the holiday industry in America. Everybody was putting on a good show for them, and it was Manx National Heritage's turn, and a reenactment was planned to take place in the grammar school here. We got half a dozen kids from the local infant school, dressed them up in period costume, and Ian and Tracy McKinley from Castle Rushen were asked to be headmaster and headmistress. But there was weddings booked that day. They're both registrars. So Ian did the weddings and Tracy then became the headmistress. And this is how this chap was asked to be the headmaster. He said, done it many times before. Absolutely love it. We took the kids inside, give them all the slate and a bit of chalk. So look, kids, my colleague Tracy can bring about 40 people in. Going to split them into two groups. And only 5 minutes each. If you're all well behaved, on your way back to school, we've got a nice little treat for you. So the kids are quite excited by this. He said, whatever I write on the blackboard, you copy on your slates. He said, I do remember it was a very hot day and I was having to stand at this door and waft it back and forth to try and get some fresh air in. But anyway, I eventually saw Tracy come around the corner and she gave me a little wave. So I went in and closed the door. I said, look, kids, they're going to be here in 2 minutes. Tracy split the group into two. She took the first group in and she closed the door behind her. And as she was taking them round, He thought, I better write something on the blackboard for the kids to copy. He got a piece of chalk out, a bit of algebra, and there he was writing on the blackboard when suddenly one of these kids threw a piece of chalk and it hit the blackboard right by the side of his head. He said, what an opportunity. I picked up my cane, turned round, and I said to these kids, who threw that at me? I'm going to thrash you to an inch of your lives. But all the kids just burst out laughing. Thankfully, so did the Americans. They thought it was part of the show. Anyway, the kids denied all knowledge, and eventually Tracy brought the first group out. As she was gathering the second group around, he closed the door. He said, look, kids, that was great. He said, but who threw that piece of chalk at me? It wasn't us, sir. But it must have been one of you. I said, it wasn't. So, well, don't do it again, whoever it was. Anyway, shh, Tracy's coming back in now with the second group. Tracy took the second group in and she closed the door. Again, as she was taking him round, he got his piece of chalk out to continue writing on the blackboard. But when he did, one of these kids threw a piece of chalk and he said, it just missed the top of my ear. He said, when I turned round with that cane and threatened to thrash the kids to an inch of their lives, little did he realise this time I actually meant it. But anyway, they all denied any knowledge. The Americans found it funny. So did I, he said, secretly. And eventually Tracy brought the second group out. They were outside here taking photographs of each other for an absolute age. But eventually Tracy managed to get them back on the coach and the next stop was Craigneish. He said, I threw that door open to get some fresh air. He said, well done, kids, that was great. But before I tell you what your treat is, tell me one thing. Who threw those pieces of chalk at me? He said, it wasn't us, sir. He said, it must have been one of you. He said, it wasn't. He said, well, it's too hot to argue, he said. So what I want you to do is now, I want you to walk out of here calmly, walk across the car park carefully, wait for your teacher to help you across the road, and we're going to take you back to school, but we're going to take you to a cafe first to get you all an ice cream and a bottle of pop. The kid's like, hey, straight out of here, straight across the road without waiting for the teacher. He said, good job there wasn't a bus coming around the corner. You'd have a few more ghosts on your tour. But anyway, everybody got across the road fine, and I went to lock up. He said, I went back in the grammar school. I said, I couldn't leave it like that. What a mess. I put all the chairs back on top of the table, swept all the rubbish up, put it in the bin outside, picked up bits of chalk everywhere, cleared their slates and put them back in the rack. And the last thing I noticed was my algebra on the blackboard. I reached in my pocket, got a tissue out, gave it a bit of lick. But as I went to wipe the blackboard, someone threw a piece of chalk and it hit me on the back of the head. He said, I turned around quickly. He said, but there was no one there. He leaned forward across the table in the pub and he said, I ran all the way home. We liked that story so much, we left him a few more beers behind the bar for him. Now, about 20 years ago, there used to be some play equipment over there in the corner of the car park, sadly no longer there, and a couple of kids were playing on it one night. It started to get dark, the street lights came on, and these two kids knew it was time to go home. So they came over here, picked up the bikes, and they started to wheel them away. But they stopped in their tracks, for they could now hear singing coming from the old grammar school. And they said it was a children's choir, where they'd been here for hours playing and they hadn't seen anybody arrive. But more importantly, they had to go and have a look inside, because if any of their friends from school had joined a choir, boy, could they give them some stick at school the following day. They came down here, put the bikes against the wall, went to tiptoe inside the grammar school, but the door was locked. There was only one thing to do. That's to have a look through the window around the corner. Follow me. These two boys came round here, leaned the bikes against the wall to climb on the frame to look into the window. But when they did, they could see that the building was empty, but they could hear singing coming from inside. And they remember it was All Things Bright and Beautiful being sung. All Things Bright and Beautiful is a very popular hymn and a very powerful hymn. I remember singing it at school with all my heart. Well, you sing the chorus with all your heart, and most of the rest of the words you don't know them. Sing the chorus with all your heart, most of the rest of the words you don't know them. Maybe 150, maybe 200 years ago, children inside this grammar school sang All Things Bright and Beautiful with so much vigour, so much energy, that the energy came out of their little bodies and went into the fabric of the building. And that's where it stayed for all those years, until one night, 20 years ago, the sun went down, the streetlights came on, and this building played that sound one more time. That, in the paranormal circles, is what they call the stone tape theory. Now, as you can see, Trudy's down there waiting for us, and this is the time you're going to meet the ghost. Let's have a walk this way. I'm now going to pass you over to Trudy for this one. I get 10 minutes off now. There you go.
Just all come in a bit closer, please. Yeah. Especially you. Right, this is the story of Tommy. Tommy is a little boy of about 10 years old who lived roughly in the early 1700s. When we first came across Tommy was about maybe 4 years ago now. All he would ever say to us was he would look in the direction of the bay, point and say, "Beware." Now, we couldn't understand why he was telling us to beware. So we've done investigations since. We thought at the time it could be he was warning us against smuggling, which it's Castletown, there were smugglers. But he wasn't. Through the years, through the weeks and the months that we've come to see him, we discovered that Tommy was press ganged. Now, they were press gang children for the simple fact they were tiny and they could put them into the bilges to work or places that adult men couldn't work. And unfortunately, Tommy lost his life aboard ship. He actually fell from the mast. He was sent up the mast to do what various things that they could do that the adults couldn't do, and he lost his footing, and that's how he lost his life. Tommy lived in Castletown, and as far as we can gather, he went to school here. This was a church right up until 1701, which then it became school. This is how we're getting a bit of a date for Tommy, because he told us he went to school here, so we're working around about 1700s for Tommy. Now, Tommy likes children. Tommy likes to talk to children. Would you like to talk to Tommy?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. We talk to Tommy in a very special way. We use what's called a pendulum. And what you do is you hold it and you ask Tommy a question, but it has to have a yes or no answer. Okay? So you've got to think of a question that he can say yes or no to. Mm. Is that all right? Do you think you could manage that?
Yeah.
Yes? Here we go. I'll show you how to do it. This is what we use. This is what we call a dowsing pendulum. And this is how we talk to ghosts.
Okay.
Okay. So, Tommy's here with us. He's right in the middle here, right beside you. How old are you?
10.
You're the same age as Tommy.
Yes.
Excellent. Now, what you have to do is you've got to tell Tommy your name and then ask a question. You just say, "I'm whatever your name is, and I'm 10. So, if you watch what I do, right? So, you hold it like that and you say, "Hiya, Tommy. We've got a little boy here tonight who would like to talk to you. Would you like to talk to him?" Now, do you see that going round and round and round like that?
Yeah.
"Thank you, Tommy." That means yes. So that means he'd like to talk to you. If it goes backwards and forwards, it means no. Okay, so the question you ask means no, or the question you ask means yes.
Okay, I'll think of a question.
So you can think of a question. Now, he's 10. And he lived in the 1700s, so he didn't have a PlayStation or anything like that, or television or computers or anything. So you could ask him, did he have brothers? Or you could ask him, did he have a dog? Or things like that. Okay? Do you think you could do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Hold your hand. So hold that like that. Put your thumb on that. Hold it and just let it fall. Okay? So, you tell him your name. Say, "Hiya, Tommy."
"Hello, Tommy."
"Your name?"
"I'm Oscar. And I was wondering, did you ever have a pet or any relation?"
Look, he's saying yes. See that?
Wow.
Okay, Tommy, thank you. It'll stop in a minute. He's awfully excited because you're talking to him. Yeah. Then you ask him another question.
"Did you have a brother, Tommy?"
Can you tell him?
I think it's beginning to round.
Yes, it is.
A bit.
It is, look.
Yeah, whoa.
So that means yes. So he had brothers. Yeah.
Tommy, was your brother the same age as you?
And that says no. Didn't ask him, was his brother older than him?
Was your brother older than you?
I don't know if you can see, but Tommy's actually trying to get hold of the crystal at the minute.
Yeah.
You can see him pulling it.
I thought I could sort of...
Could you feel it, could you?
Well, I can see it jittering quite
yes.
quickly.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So, you got another question for him?
Mm-hmm. Tommy, were you quite fond of your brother? That's... no.
That is quite a good no, isn't it? Yes.
I can't quite tell, it's going round.
Yeah, sometimes, unless it goes round and round and round and round and round, it means no. Hmm. Or that he doesn't really not want to answer the question.
Okay. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. So, did you enjoy that?
Did you have fun talking to me, Tommy?
Oh. That is yes. See it going round now?
Yeah.
Okay. That's definitely a yes, isn't it? Did you have fun talking to Tommy?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Tommy.
Okay, sweetheart. So that's Tommy. And as you can see, especially when we let a child talk to him, children have no preconceptions and they don't even think to turn the crystal as such. He did it and it did it all for him. And you knew you were talking to Tommy, didn't you?
Yeah.
So, and this is how we do it. Wow. So. We are learning a little bit more all the time. Tonight when I was talking to Tommy before you all come along, I discovered, which I haven't for the last 4 years, that Tommy's actually wearing a scarf. For the first time I saw the scarf tonight and he has it tied around his neck. So whether it's winter now for Tommy, we don't know. But last week after we had the thunderstorm, one of the people that was talking to Tommy asked, did the thunderstorm frightened him, did he see the thunderstorm? And Tommy didn't even know there was a thunderstorm. So what we're working out is Tommy lives in what we call a ghost loop of so many months, and it just keeps replaying itself over and over and over again. And different things that we've picked up from Tommy is within a loop, so it will be repeated over and over and over again. So that's our story of Tommy, and hopefully when you come back another time, we'll have learnt some more information for you all.
Now then, who's heading back to Douglas tonight on the way home? A few of you? Brilliant. Do you always say hello to the fairies at the bridge?
Yes.
What do you think these little people look like? Are they pixies with wings? Do they have a star on the end of a want to grant you a wish? Bing! What you're actually saying hello to at the bridge is a Begain, or... if you're a Harry Potter fan, a boggart. That is the Lancashire expression J.K. Rowling chose for the books. A Begain or a boggart is a mythical creature. What it does is, as soon as it sees you, it will instantly read your mind, because it wants to know your worst fear, your worst nightmare in life. And then, in a split second, it will transfer itself into your worst nightmare. So the next time you go over the bridge, if you're scared of snakes the most in the world, you may see it as a 20-foot snake slithering down the road heading towards your car. If you're scared of daddy long legs in the most in the world, tonight in the headlines you will see a 10-foot daddy long legs coming down the road heading towards your car. If you're scared of spiders the most in the world, tonight you will see a giant tarantula coming down from its web to sit on top of your bonnet. Or, let's see who twitches at this one, shall we? If you never put your tax return in on time a couple of weeks ago and you're waiting for that dreaded fine to come in the post, the next time you go over the bridge, you will see a tax man, suit and tie on, brown envelope in his hand, with your name clearly written on the front in big letters, because the only reason it does this is it wants to scare you to death. That's why it transforms itself into your worst nightmare. So... that's why we say hello at the bridge. We say hello to it first to show it that we're not scared of it before it tries to scare us. Little pixies with wings? No. Giant hairy monsters? Yeah. That's why you're saying hello to at the bridge. Right, stand over there with your back to the gate. Safety in numbers. Safety, don't worry, no one's going to come out the gate. I'd be highly surprised if they did. You won't be the only one running. Now, in 1977, three boys from the Boys Brigade visiting the island on a camp trip asked their leader, could they earn a badge whilst on holiday? Maybe a bravery badge. Could he find them a challenge worthy of such an honour? And boy, did he find them a challenge. He got permission of the owners of Castle Rushen for these three boys to stay there the night on their own. If they could, they would have earned a bravery badge. They went in there at 8 o'clock at night, and they had a great time. But in the early hours of the morning, they wanted to get a good look round Castletown. And to do this, they went right to the top of the keep, the highest part you can go. They ran up the spiral staircase, which took them out onto the roof. But as they entered the roof, they were stopped in their tracks, for there stood a woman in a black dress. She had a bonnet on her head and a veil trailing across her face, but these boys said she had very, very white hands, just like the middle drawing on the wall of bedroom one. These three boys fled from the castle and vowed never to step foot in this building ever again, which sadly they never did. But they're all still friends, and they all meet up for have a beer every now and then. And a few years ago, they met up in a pub one night, and they started talking about the old times. And one mentioned the time they went to the Isle of Man. And one of the others said, here's a question I always meant to ask you two. Did I dream it? Was it my imagination? Or did we all see a ghost of a woman on the top of the castle? And they all recalled exactly the same story. Now, one of these chaps is a solicitor. So I tell you what, I've got an idea. Pop to my office tomorrow, which is what they did. And inside his office, they swore an affidavit, a legal document saying that, yes, they had seen a ghost on the top of the castle. They all signed it, and they had it framed and presented it to Manx National Heritage. So Manx National Heritage are the very proud owners of a legal document swearing that Castle Rushen is indeed haunted. Now, about 5 or 6 years ago, a walk started one night. We were just telling the stories about the police station when a group of 9 or 10 people came running around the corner. Are we too late to join in? Not at all. Feel free, we've only just started ourselves. Then as we started making our way around the town, one of the ladies from the group said, I'm sorry we're a bit late. I had no problem at all. She said, yeah, well, one big family from Colby. It took us ages getting everybody organised tonight. She said, but the reason why we've come on the walk is because we've heard that you document all the ghost stories you're told. Is that right? I said, it is. Our aim is to document every ghost story we know. And by documenting it, when we're no longer here, our work won't be lost. So she said, oh, in fact, can I tell you a ghost story at the end? I said, oh, please. And I don't mind saying it in front of everybody. Oh, that would be lovely. So at the end, I invited this lady to come forward. I introduced her and said, this lady's got a ghost story she would now like to share with us. She said, actually, would you mind if we crossed over the road and told it outside the main gate of Castle Rushen? I said, it's your story. You can tell it where you like. So we all piled over here. She then introduced herself to everybody. And she said that the reason why she came on the walk is to tell us this ghost story because she wanted documented. She didn't want it ever to be forgotten. She said her father used to work in Castle Rushen. And in 1979, he was the very last member of the staff. He was locking the castle up. To do this, he'd locked up the gate, the top of the barbican, commonly known as the dog leg. He was then walking down past the first corner when a woman in a black dress ran past him. He shouted, sorry, I'm loved, we're closed. But she took no notice and she ran around the corner. Well, of course, she was going to be met by a 3-inch solid oak gate of a castle. He didn't have to chase her, she would have to come back. So he waited, and he waited, and he waited. He walked up to the corner to have a look round for her, but when he did, all he could see was the closed locked gate of the castle. Now the reason why they wanted to tell me this story is because a few months earlier, their father had sadly passed away. and they wanted their father's stories documented so it never be forgotten. I said, I will document that with the greatest of pleasure when I get home. I said, actually, I love it. It's a classic woman in black ghost story. I said, not only that, we start the stories off with Castle Rushen with a woman in black story, and I would love to finish it with a woman in black ghost story. Would you mind if I used your father's ghost story? I said, oh, no problem at all. That would be nice if you would. I said, actually, I'd love to save it towards the end. In fact, the very end. And can I pinch your idea of taking people across the road and telling them your father's ghost story right here where it took place? She looked at me with tears in her eyes. She said, you know something? That would be an honour to our father's memory. Not only that, she said, people who hear my father's story might just remember and realise what it was like that very strange night when our father, the biggest, bravest man of the family, came home from work white and shaking because he'd just seen the woman in black who haunted Castle Rushen. I'd like you to remember these stories tonight when you're in bed, because tonight it's going to get rather wet and rather windy. And that tree outside your bedroom window will now sway so much it'll tap your glass. This will wake you up. You'll be thinking, all them stories true? True as we know of. When suddenly you start to hear footsteps walking up your stairs. But don't worry, the footsteps always stop when they get to the top. They always stop when they get to the top. But tonight, the footsteps continue down your corridor, heading towards your bedroom door, by which point you're really wishing you hadn't had four cheese pizza and downloaded The Exorcist on Netflix. When is it happening? It is. The footsteps have stopped outside your bedroom door. The bead of sweat is starting to run down your brow, and you're pulling the duvet a little bit closer around your chin. Is it happening? It is. The door handle is starting to turn, click. And just like the horror movie, the door now creaks open. There stood in the doorway of your bedroom will be a figure all dressed in black. Hands outstretched! Don't worry, it's only the woman in black. Thank you for coming down. Safe journey home. And as we like to say, please, on behalf of Isle of Man Ghost Tours, do have nightmares. Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed it. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for coming. You're too kind. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You'll be able to hear yourself on Monday, apparently, on Manx Radio. There you go.
That was a little look at Isle of Man Ghost Tours walk around Castletown. And thank you again to Alan and the team for having me down. If you want to get the full experience, you're going to have to go along to one of their tours. The details are available at their website and on their Facebook page.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.